With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Jason Burma Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
And we are back, and I've got some tales from the road in a post-truth world. Now, I want to start by saying this. Took a trip to New York, actually saw a lot of my friends and family that I don't get to see often, my brother maybe a few times a year, some of these people once every year or two, one of which I hadn't seen in really maybe even over a decade. And this was one of my best friends from high school, but we'll get there. Now, I tried to stay away from the news cycle. This is a time to just kind of spend time with loved ones and have a good time. I didn't want to get any political debates, but one of the things that I could not avoid really talking about, especially when I went to my brother's, was Harvey Weinstein. And Harvey Weinstein is out of jail. And it seems like it's much ado about nothing. Now, let's start here. When I get things wrong, I tell everybody. And on the run-up to the sentencing of Weinstein, I did not think that there was a snowball's chance in Hades that he was going to be doing any jail time. I thought they were just going to exonerate him on the spot. Little did I know that a Cosby was in play, and we'll get to that also. I was ecstatic when I heard he was actually sentenced and would serve prison time. In fact, I remember the very moment where I was. I was actually in DC on the way there, almost there, on the way to an Action for Assange event where I was alone in my car, but that didn't stop me from cheering, screaming, smiling, pulling one of these. Yes. Hey, there's a little bit of justice in the world, huh? Huh? Maybe an air high five to nobody. A lot happened then. But as soon as I went on air, next, I took a knee and I said, look, this is why we fight. This is because at least we can bring some of them to justice in some manner. Well, I guess not. I guess I got to pull that one back, huh? Because Harvey Weinstein's not in jail. His appeal actually went through. Now, the process took a very, very long time. My brother and I have this question. You know, how much time did he really serve in the country club they put him in? We saw later on what happened with Jeffrey Epstein and the initial Palm Beach case. Now, I would hope that he was actually at least spending time in the facility, as in all the time, unlike Epstein. But who knows? Anything is on the table in a post-truth world. And let's not forget that Harvey Weinstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, and Jeffrey Epstein all in a little party and a picture out. Wait, where? Oh, that's right. Over on the royal grounds with their buddy Prince Andrew hosting, who's also not in jail for anything. So I'm a lot of people go, Jason, that's just a real black pill attitude. No, it's the truth. I hate to tell everybody, it's the facts as I see them. Look, I'm not saying don't fight, but my goodness, what a kick in the keister, a punch in the gut, and a groin shot. Now, I actually saw one of my best friends from high school. She was the valedictorian of my class. Very bright girl. I remember in all the AP and all the things that, you know, I did as a kid too, but she usually beat me. 9 times out of 10, kicked my harness. I'll be totally frank. However, just not there when it comes to reality because of TDS. Now, it surprised me because I didn't read, oh, Trump is disgusting. I'm like, can you give me a policy or something that you didn't like? Well, he's a racist and a bigot in January 6th. And I'm just like, my goodness. And then she said, wait, do you think that they stole the election? I go, Heidi, of course I think that. I think that he won in a landslide. And I'm like, you do understand that they didn't actually look at any of the evidence, right? And she's like, what are you talking about? There was no evidence. I go, no. I go, the evidence was overwhelming. The judges just decided that these people didn't have standing to bring the case, so they didn't have to look at the evidence. And she's like, thought about it for a second. She's like, you know, I just don't want to know these things. I just don't care. It was a peer into the world of two government workers that now live in a post-truth world and have TDS and are accepting of the narrative that's out there. And that's unfortunate, but hey, there are truth narratives out there too. And that's why we've got this weekend truth festival coming up. If you'd like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on stage across one weekend, then listen up. The weekend truth festival will feature such speakers as Katie Hopkins, Kate Shemirani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. We love those good vibes. As food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will be provided on site. For more information and to find out how to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruthfestival.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. We're going to kick it to a break quick. We got Adam Clark on the flip. It's TNT Radio.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
U.S. lawmakers have reportedly called for tallying against the International Criminal Court, the ICC, if it moves ahead with expected plans to issue arrest warrants against Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other senior Israeli officials. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark, bringing the ruckus. Adam, what can you tell us about this story?
Well, you know, every once in a while, apparently, politicians from across the aisle can come together and agree on something. I guess that's the moral of this story. No, just kidding. But yeah, apparently, this is mostly thanks to some reporting from Axios, and then a couple other outlets picked up on it. One of them was the our good old friends, RT. So not a lot of major reporting about this, but apparently there are, you know, whispers happening in the halls of justice, as it were. Get out of here with that. Yeah, so they are bandying about the idea of some sort of retaliation, most likely in the form of sanctions, is how we usually do it. Regardless, responding to media reports this week that the Hague-based tribunal, the ICC, will soon post warrants for the arrests of none other than Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, alongside other high-ranking Israeli officials, members of Congress have issued statements warning of consequences for any such step. Here's one. U.S. Representative Brad Sherman, Democrat from California. He is among those insisting that Washington would retaliate for any attempt to arrest Israeli leaders during their ongoing war with Hamas. The congressman, who is on his 14th term, said, quote, "The ICC apparently considers warrants on Israeli leaders for legitimate self-defense," end quote. Sherman argued that such a move would turn the tribunal into a quote unquote kangaroo court, adding, quote, "President Joe Biden must condemn this, and I know Congress will ensure consequences for such an absurd decision," end quote. The potential arrest warrants are connected to the ICC's investigation of alleged atrocities by the Israeli military and Palestinian militant groups dating back to 2014. Axios reported on Monday that Netanyahu had asked Biden to step in and stop the ICC from trying to prosecute him or other officials in his government. Of course, we're all aware what's happened. They've actually fought a month-long war back then in 2014. And then the latest thing took place beginning in October of last year. So thanks to all of that, we're now seeing, let's see. So there was 1,100 people who were killed in the October incursion, October 7th, hundreds of hostages. And then, of course, 34,000, I believe, is the number of Palestinians have been killed since then. So now separately, the ICJ, the UN's International Court of Justice, issued a ruling in January saying it was, quote unquote, plausible that Israeli forces have committed acts of genocide in the besieged Palestinian enclave. But let's see. Let's find some more. Cherry pick some more of these commenters. Here's one. Democrat from New York, Representative Richie Torres, who, similar to Sherman, has insisted that both Congress and Biden must respond with, quote unquote, strong consequences if the ICC issues warrants for the Israelis. He said, quote, the weaponization of law in the service of terror cannot be allowed to stand, end quote. Interesting statement. Republicans have issued similar statements. Here's one coming from Representative Elise Stefanik, Republican from New York, where you just were, Jason. Anyways, quote, the ICC is propping up Hamas by attempting to punish the only democracy in the Middle East just for defending itself against barbaric terrorism, end quote. Back across the other side, good old Senator John Fetterman, Democrat from Pennsylvania, said seeking to prosecute Israeli leaders, quote, would be a fatal blow to the judicial and moral standing of the ICC, end quote. And he called on Biden to intervene. On Monday, the Biden administration, additionally, this is on top of all of this, they accused Israeli military units, five of them to be exact, of human rights violations for the first time ever. These incidents in question actually occurred before October 7th, and the administration apparently has no plans to impose sanctions or restrict military aid to Israel. But hey, let's pick one more comment real quick from House Speaker Mike Johnson. He insists that the ICC has no jurisdiction over Israel. He called the possible warrants, quote, baseless and illegitimate, end quote, adding that they would undermine U.S. national security. Jason, what say you, my friend?
Well, let's start with the fact no one's going to be arrested. Let's just put that right out. So, what I mean, that's just reality. I mean, we started with a little bit of reality. This isn't going to be one of those moments. Again, snowball's chance in hell. It's not even that. This is a pissing contest, if you will. This is all political theater. And, you know, we talk again about all of the aid that we give Israel, okay? People aren't talking about the U.S. Special Forces, again, were there before October 7th, on October 7th, and then we sent more U.S. Special Forces on the ground there. Whatever is going on there, our military is aiding in that by not just giving them, quote unquote, equipment and supplies. They are on the ground, okay? Now, again, being in New York and being at this event, and being at a state school where there are not only many Jewish New York Americans, but ones that have actually been to Israel many times. It is a subject that I tried to avoid altogether. And then when it was brought up, I'll tell you right now, I walked away from the table. There are very down the line people. I don't know where this is going, but it's not going to be Benjamin Netanyahu in a jail cell. So where is it going? You know, there are now proposals by the Biden administration talking about bringing refugees in here. Now, I know a lot of people will kick and scream and say that is a very bad idea because of what they've done to the country. And I can't argue with that. When I say they, I mean us and Israel together, just like I was trying to illustrate before. And when I say Israel and the United States, I don't mean Adam and I don't mean the average Israeli citizen. I mean the military-industrial complex that works in cohort. Yeah, it's not going to look good, all right? I don't know what the solution is, but again, where do you put these people? Hey, people say, again, Egypt doesn't. Egypt houses a lot of refugees from other countries that, again, our military-industrial complex has helped destroy. So I think there's going to be a lot of posturing, not just with the ICC, but every other global organization to try to show their authority and how much they care. And let's be honest, this is going to continue. And what to me equates to genocide and really the possibility of retaliation from that could pop off a global conflict becomes more and more of a reality, Adam.
Yeah. And you know, we continue to be party to this for some reason. I still can't wrap my head around this. Like, why we're like Speaker Johnson says this has to do with our national security. Well, maybe I guess it implies what you're just mentioning there, you know, some sort of international incident. But wouldn't we be the ones who are causing that, you know, by not helping, you know, calm down the tensions out there? Wouldn't you suggest that the United States of America might have some sort of influence or sway on the international stage and say, hey, hold on, buddy. Maybe we should, you know, take a break here. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, they're certainly. It's funny that if I'm not mistaken, a lot of these international courts were going after Putin, right, during the whole Ukraine thing, and America was all about that. And now the same courts want it. They're like, you know, now that they want to go after Netanyahu, they're like, well, wait a minute, no jurisdiction here. Sorry, we're not party to that. We can't, you know. No comment.
Well, everything is flipped and inverted, my friend. I mean, look at the protests, for instance. I was in a college town. There were people on Main Street protesting the war. Pro-Hamas, anti-Semitic, just throwing out buzzwords that are in headlines from talking heads that are paid millions of dollars to deceive you, or wannabes who want to be paid millions of dollars to deceive you. That's the reality. Adam, thank you so much for bringing this story out. But again, I can guarantee you this is all showboating. This is all politics. No one is going to jail. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Derek Brose of the Conscious Resistance. We're going to be talking the Summit of the Future and the UN 2.0. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
TNT's Joseph Arthur.
I wonder if you can simplify sort of the different components of the war that we're in, how it's working, what the motivation is.
The bottom line is nitrogenous fertilizers are one of the main engines, and those are being interrupted. And that's why I went to BASF twice before Nord Stream was cut, because I suspected they were going to cut Nord Stream. So I was there with Misako Gunaha at BASF, and I asked somebody inside the plant, it's a 10 square kilometer plant, right? And so I asked him, what happens if Nord Stream is interrupted? This was before it was interrupted. He said, we are dead. Well, now it's gone. It's been destroyed, right? And I predicted that publicly.
Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
The human mind is like a computer, no matter how efficient it may be. Its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Joining me now is somebody who has been crashing through the lies and disinformation in a post-truth world for some time now. His name is Derek Brose of the Conscious Resistance. And Derek, you've got this new piece out there on the Summit for the Future, the United Nations 2.0. I've covered this topic, but it's a rebranding of the same old organization, really authoritarianism globally, that they've been pitching through benevolence for years, but now it really seems like they've gained traction and infiltrated so many elements of our society. So tell us about this summit and what they're putting there out on the table right now.
Absolutely. So the Summit of the Future is going to be taking place this September the 22nd, 23rd in New York City, and it's part of the broader week. Well, actually more about 2 week long United Nations General Assembly, which is an annual meeting. The UN will be meeting for their 79th meeting this September. And as I said, 2 days of that are dedicated to this Summit of the Future, where they are alleged to be preparing to sign something called the Pact for the Future, where they're trying to get all of the 100 plus member states of the UN to sign this pact, which has a number of different declarations and stipulations. But you kind of hit the nail on the head there in the beginning. Their main goal here is what they're referring to as UN 2.0, or remaking multilateral systems. All of these different euphemisms that we know and those who've been paying attention over the years know really mean world government, global government. That's what this is all coming down to. And I wrote this article, which dives into a little bit of the history of where the Summit of the Future comes from the last few years, because it didn't just start just now. It's been an ongoing, as you mentioned, like it kind of rebrands and builds on previous agreements going all the way back to 1992 in Rio for the UN, one of the first UN environmental conferences. So this has just been building and building for decades. But now we're at a point where the UN, the World Economic Forum, and a bunch of associated globalist organizations, Rockefeller Foundation, and of course this leads to the Club of Rome and others, are essentially saying it's time to declare a planetary emergency. And through that, and to do that, we need to have stronger global government systems. And it really seems like the Summit for the Future, which is coming up in just a few months, is going to be a major step towards that, at least in terms of them signing this new agreement. And, you know, I guess we'll have to see what happens there and what, you know, what the coming years after that look like, because we know they're racing, and they say in their own documents that they're committing to the 2030 agenda, Agenda 2030, to make it happen on time.
And again, these guys have been very, very patient in their past works, right? You've had not Agenda 2030, but Agenda 201, and you know all these other things. You mentioned the Kyoto protocols all the way back in Brazil. And right now, they do have scary traction. And for all those people that used to laugh at me, at least what that, you know, kind of peripherally paid attention to the UN, they said, oh, the UN doesn't really have any power. The World Health Organization doesn't really have any power. Attitudes changed after COVID. And right now, we also have this pandemic treaty that they're trying to push through. So we see on multiple fronts that these things are moving forward. Now, we even have the global health security that we've covered here just within the United States that what encompasses many, many different nation states, not just in a promise, but economically. And really, that's been the mantra of what? Davos, this public-private partnership and stakeholder capitalism. So kind of talk about how this is all being homogenized right now. And that's why really I am concerned with this timeline, because now if you question elections and you're at some kind of level that might be able to make a difference, a county commissioner, someone that can try to propose an audit. No, instead, you're not only speared in the media, which may have been a tactic 10, 15, 20 years ago, but they'll criminally charge you. So it's becoming extremely hard even to expose the corruption of elections that are not free and fair. So, you know, this is a global governance system in their own words. So kind of talk about that timeline and the avenues they're pushing this forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And just anybody who doubts what you were saying there, Jason, that they're really trying to push beyond the idea of national governance or local governance into this idea of global or international governance. Just a couple of months ago in January, the UN, the Summit for the Future is being led by Germany and Namibia, who are the co-facilitators of the summit, and they released what's called the zero draft of the summit. So we got the first look at this massive document and what they're going to be proposing and what they're calling for. And it just pretty much restates previous documents. One was put out in 2020, and this is coincidental, right? June 2020, the United Nations is announcing their 75th anniversary, and they put out this declaration, which they were calling on the Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The member states were saying, we need to recommit to Agenda 2030. We call on you to issue a report. He issued that report about a year later. It was called Our Common Agenda, and it was during the Our Common Agenda report that this call for a Summit of the Future really began. So you could kind of see it all beginning. But I just think it's interesting because that month, June 2020, is the same month that the World Economic Forum announced the Great Reset. And they put out all the propaganda and videos about it and Klaus Schwab's book. So both UN and World Economic Forum were working on some big things at that time. So now here we are, January 2024, they released the first zero draft. And it says several times that they're going to leave no one behind. So don't worry, they're not leaving you behind. They're trying to bring everybody along with it. And they say multiple times, we're going to accomplish the 2030 goals on time, in full. There is no other way. And in this one section, they talk about, quote, reinvigorating the multilateral system. And that just means, of course, the multi-governance system. Says that this draft will commit the UN to a vision of a multilateral system that is, quote, inclusive, to allow for a diverse range of actors beyond states. And I think that plays exactly into what you're talking about, the stakeholder capitalism that the World Economic Forum has been promoting, NGOs, think tanks, corporations, nonprofits, whatever, that they have a voice. You know, they want it to sound like they're talking about, oh, the people, we're all going to be have a seat at the table. But no, it's they want all these extra players and sort of modern day fascism, corporate and state working together, extra governmental working together. And so that inclusive to allow for a diverse range of actors beyond states, to me, that's saying right there, like, the, and of course they speak in very coded, veiled ways, but I think
it is modern day fascism to the T. Modern day fascism to the T. We got to take a quick break for the headlines. Stay tuned. We're going to continue with more on this summit of the future after this. It's TNT.
Programming to bring you some breaking news.
Breaking news.
News flash.
Got it.
Now, TNT Radio News. For TNT, this is James O'Neill. Beijing has responded sharply to new U.S. legislation that counters Chinese influence, including an $8 billion investment in Indo-Pacific security and a potential TikTok ban, warning of forceful retaliation if the U.S. does not reverse these actions. State troopers used pepper spray and stun grenades to arrest at least 40 pro-Palestine protesters at the University of Texas in Austin, as tensions on U.S. college campuses escalate.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Now, Derek, when we talk about the language, right, constantly they make it sound like this is for equality when they use the term equity, that we're going to have a stake in all this and it's for Mother Earth. But when it comes down to it, they're also using very outward language that is provably false, like climate crisis. And this carbon credit system is now really gaining momentum globally as traditional currencies and systems are failing on a level we've never seen. So let's speak to that, because a lot of people don't realize that if we do go to this digital currency, a lot of people talk about a quote unquote social credit score. That will be directly integrated and encompassed by this idea of a climate crisis and a carbon credit system, correct?
Absolutely. And, you know, the summit of the future, their zero draft, I just mentioned before the break, it actually discusses this. There's a section that says we need a quote global financial system that works for all people. Like you said, they want it to sound like it's, you know, this is, we're all finally getting a seat at the table. It's inclusive, just, representative, effective, and resilient, and responsive to the world today. But this is all about pushing us towards the CBDCs. And they're definitely using the climate alleged crisis as the one of the many avenues to push in this direction. I also reported that last June, and not many people caught this, there was only a few mainstream headlines in France about it, that in June of last year, French President Emmanuel Macron hosted the Prime Minister of the UK, hosted Biden, hosted so many heads of state from across Europe, and they had what they called the Summit for a New Global Financing Pact, which was just another one of these sort of things. And they keep using language saying, we need a new Bretton Woods moment. And as you know, Jason, it was Bretton Woods where the original IMF and World Bank were first conceived. And it was where the arrangements to have all countries trading in US dollars, which made the dollar very strong. That was what they call the Bretton Woods moment. So the last few years, we've had people like Klaus Schwab, the head of the UN, and documents like this over at the Zero Draft, the Summit for the Future, and this Global Financial Pact, specifically saying it's time for a new Bretton Woods moment. It's time to remake the financial system. So when they're talking about the summit of the future and the pact of the future, this isn't just about having another UN meeting where they discuss. I believe this is definitely going to be a major step in terms of putting the financial pieces in place. But absolutely, as you also mentioned, this is very much about climate change. It's even mentioned in this document that there should be a new international criminal court for people who harm the environment. And it's interesting because it actually says, even if you're a government official, military officer, corporate CEO, et cetera, et cetera. Now, in a perfect world, I could see something like that working, and we could get, you know, the military people who are responsible for not only war crimes, but dropping bombs and harming the environment. Because for those who don't know, the U.S. military is actually the biggest polluter in the world. You know, you could see some value to that, but we know that that's not what it's going to be about. It's going to be about what's on your plate and how often are you driving? Do you have enough carbon credits? It's going to be about going after the individual. So this is in this document. This is in what's being discussed. I wanted to mention just one other piece real briefly, is that they also call for the UN to institute an emergency platform that could be activated, and this is their own words, in the event of such a shock that it has an impact on multiple regions of the world, where the UN would require a coherent, coordinated, and multidimensional response. So this is them getting ready to declare what they're calling a planetary emergency, and they want the UN to include in this pact for the future, which they may sign in September, a planetary emergency climate fund, basically an emergency fund. And if the UN was to declare, okay, multiple parts of the world are being affected by climate crisis or economic collapse or alien, whatever, you know, all these different cards they may play, they could institute this, declare a planetary emergency, and the UN would have a lot of power. And it sort of plays right into the World Health Organization treaty and that trying to give the WHO a lot of power. We're seeing these globalist organizations really step up.
Absolutely. And I want to hone in what you just said about the U.S. military, right? A lot of people don't understand that the U.S. military, based on the fact that we bomb, we don't even know about our testing, folks, but do you understand the carbon emissions of a CBM? Like, seriously, like, what people have no idea, like, but they don't mind because it's doing what they're really concerned about. When they tell you too many people are doing too many things, and that's why we have climate change, they mean you're living, and we don't like that. So we'll use all the carbon in the world to literally kill you and your friends if we deem it necessary. I mean, that's a real dark reality for people to understand, but that is really what's happening. So that's not even measured. See, they don't get measured when they put off a drone and a missile, and we're talking all sorts of carbon emissions. That takes out five people, they're darn happy to do it. Doesn't matter about your carbon footprint anymore. Now, the other thing that is really important to that is the selective enforcement. Now, you talked about climate criminals. The truth of the matter is this carbon credit system lets corporations pollute and do whatever they want and use as much carbon as they like. Again, a big tell that this isn't about saving the environment. The more they use, the more they pay into the system of these credits, which will ultimately not even trickle, but rain down on the general populace and literally micromanage every aspect of our lives. Am I exaggerating, or am I hitting the nail on the head on that one?
You're 100% right, Jason. Like you said, the average person won't be able to afford to buy this carbon credits where you can sort of buy your way out of this. Oh, sorry, you can't drive this week. Sorry, you can't eat a burger this month, et cetera. Where the people who are obviously wealthy can just buy all kinds of credits and pretend like they're super green. It's the faux green movement. We're also seeing, this has been going on for a while, but this is part of this new agreement, what they sometimes call debt for nature swaps, where after the IMF and the World Bank have already come in and, you know, bankrupted some South American or developing African nation, and they started stealing all their diamonds and gold, but they just can't get out of debt. Well, now they'll do debt for nature swaps. Okay, you got a rainforest, we'll take that in exchange for your debt. And now that's owned by, you know, some big corporation or some government. So this is not about saving the planet. It's all about the same people who've created these same problems that the planet actually does have, you know, actual pollution, destroying the oceans and things like that, that we should look towards the big players like the corporations and the military, et cetera. the same people are the ones who are driving this conversation, and now they're here to present themselves as the heroes. We need more people to pay attention to this. If you want to see the full article, it's at theconsciousresistance.com, and you can get into all the nitty-gritty details. I'll just end with saying that it leads to the Club of Rome. Like, the Club of Rome is not the only organization, but if you don't know them, look more into them. They had a big hand in helping the World Economic Forum in their first couple of years, and they've been calling for a planetary emergency since at least 2019, since before COVID. They put out a document called the Planetary Emergency Platform, and wouldn't you know it, here it is 5 years later, and the United Nations is potentially about to sign a document calling for a planetary emergency.
So how do we move away from this? Again, how do we get the momentum that we've gotten with the pandemic treaty? And now I'm not saying that's going to fail, but at least people know enough about it that it has a chance to fail. Obviously, we're going to have delegates and representatives and power players that, have value within not only our corporate world, but our political world that are going to attend no matter what. How do we push away from this? Is the bottom line we have to get behind people like Mike Lee that say defund the UN, let's get out of the UN altogether? I mean, what do we do?
I think we have to fight on every front, Jason, and that might include, like you said, if there's politicians who are open and willing to speak against Agenda 2030 and speak against the United Nations. Unfortunately, as you started earlier the conversation, people get smeared right away. You're just some right-winger conspiracy theorist, but I think there's more people who see beyond those false labels. You need to find people who are willing to speak up on the local level, state level, international, whatever you got, I think. But also, for me, in terms of the Summit of the Future, like you said, a lot of people know about the WHO Treaty. I don't know too many people who really know about this. This is why I wanted to talk about this week. And I wrote this article and I've been doing interviews and videos about this. I'm hoping in the next few months we can build up awareness. I don't know if that means, go protest outside the UN building on that day. Maybe that's, effective to reach people on the streets. But in terms of actually stopping this, we need to become vocal. Because, with the WHO Treaty, it got to the point where Tedros is having to address conspiracy theories about the World Health Organization Treaty, the voices and the pushback and all the way in Japan and different countries and Iran, other nations pushing back and saying no. It got loud enough that they had to address us and say, oh, there's conspiracy theories about sovereignty and this and that. They wouldn't be saying that if the voices weren't getting loud enough for them to hear. So I think we need to try to build up the same awareness, and perhaps by September there's that same kind of pushback, and maybe it won't go through. I mean, that's the best I can say right now. We don't have a lot of power, unfortunately, to stop what the United Nations does, but this is exactly the point. Imagine a world where the United Nations can just pass whatever law. Next thing you know, your local city's doing it, and the cop says, well, the UN said so. There's no representation. How do you really fight and push back about that when the so-called representative is, thousands of miles away in New York City or Switzerland or wherever, the UN wants to be based at or whatever.
And they don't represent you in the first place, Derek. Again, if it gets that far, exactly, that is the authoritarian. That's the authoritarianism. That's the regime. We do have to push back. It's the Summit of the Future. The Conscious Resistance is where you can check it out. Derek, thank you so much for joining us. We got to take a break. When we come back, we've got Bayes Lit Analyzer. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT after this.
Hi, I'm Susan Lucci. I never thought about heart disease until I had my own heart event. At first, like so many other women out there, I ignored my symptoms. A slight pressure on my chest, shortness of breath. I thought, I don't have time to be sick. I had a 90% blockage in my main artery and a 75% blockage in the adjacent artery. I received two stents in my arteries. Stents developed through research funded by the American Heart Association. Those stents saved my life. I'm so grateful to the American Heart Association. Their research helped save my life. I can enjoy life with my children, my grandchildren, and my friends. Please, listen to your heart. The only reason I'm here today is because I did. Learn more about the American Heart Association's life-saving work at helpheart.org.
Many pollution sources can affect the air you breathe, from power plants and vehicles to dust and wildfires. Knowing more about local air quality can help you protect your health. If you're thinking about buying an air sensor, EPA has a series of videos to help you get the most out of it. Learn how EPA collects and uses regulatory data, how EPA communicates health messaging, and how to interpret the readings from your sensor. Visit epa.gov/air-sensor-toolbox.
Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
Our next guest breaks down all sorts of good stuff in the realm of film, political history, and beyond. He is Based Lit Analyzer. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. Today we're going to be talking about Fidel Castro and his visit to New York City in 1960. Do tell.
Yes, sir. This is an interesting sort of segment of history, especially in the history of socialism, communism, and the revelatory things that come out of this particular meeting that continue to affect us here in the United States and globally. And I recently read a book called Cuba Libre here about the Che and Fidel and the improbable revolution. And it sort of got me thinking about a couple of things, one of which is the weird nature of the hippie movement and the hippie sort of aesthetic and the fashion that came out of this thing, just on a basic level. And I think this is interesting because obviously we're living in a time where younger generations are, you know, there are so many things coming out of social media and TikTok and such, you know, huge sweeping changes happening. And I think it's important to look back at some of the prior events that happened, you know, even 60 years ago. And one thing that I read in Tom Wolfe's book here, which is called Radical Chic, published in 1971, is that when Fidel and Che and when they were running the revolution before the victory, they paid a visit to New York City. And when they got there, they met with glitterati and culturati and Leonard Bernstein and all these various sort of Upper West Side, what they call limousine liberals. And they got massive donations, and the U.S. was almost wholly in favor of the revolution. Fidel even did an interview with Ed Sullivan, of all people, where Ed Sullivan says, you know, I just met with Elvis, this young man, Elvis Presley, recently. You remind me of him. You're like a George Washington or a Ben Franklin. You seem like a good young man. And then just, you know, a little while later after the revolution, the tide completely turns. And the CIA goes full on against Fidel. We have the Cuban Missile Crisis. But in the meantime, this like left the seeds of this weird thing where it influenced youth in this country to throw away the like strict norms of the 1950s. And they start dressing like radical chic, like Che and Fidel and the revolutionaries. Their hair grows long. They grow beards. They dress in olive drab. And they sort of... you know, this obviously culture creation plays a role in this and Tavistock and all that. But the seeds of this, I just find really interesting. It's so interesting to me that a foreign militant uprising provides the seed for such a huge change in the United States. And I think there are obvious correlations, you know, now, and this is a kind of a recurring cycle. But I bring this up because, you know, you're so astute on geopolitics and I want to know your sort of take on this and Fidel and why the tide turned so heavily against him.
Well, I guess that would be my question, because if you do look at that and the quote unquote tide turning against him, right, you do have the Central Intelligence Agency very involved in people like Timothy Leary pushing psychotropic drugs and then kind of utilizing some of those drugs that they're kind of mass experimenting on the populace in things like Operation Midnight Climax, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people think that, for instance, LSD was just the hippie movement. They don't look at all the other drugs and the partnerships with the pharmaceutical industry, but Midnight Climax in particular, they were also utilizing houses of prostitution at the time with teenage girls. Again, many of them part of that kind of dropout movement where it was okay to hitch a ride somewhere and kind of live on the streets. That turns out a lot of people that end up being sex workers. You know, it is interesting that movement culture, like you said, the long hair, the beards, the military outfits is there. I think part of it may be that you're creating kind of this enemy and you get that left-right paradigm. So if you're protesting a war on valid grounds, you can point to the radical that's already been smeared all the time on the television on top of, you know, the drug addict and them not being valid. We still see that today. I mean, I would argue even what's going on modern day right now with the Israeli and the Palestinian conflict, right? That's being framed in a manner that if you dare question this thing, you're pro-Hamas or you're anti-Semitic, or you want Israel to be wiped off the map, when people like me are like, hey, I just don't want a military conflict where a bunch of people are dying and that could actually pop off World War III. But that is in the narrative right now. And it's too bad that, for instance, there's a lot of right-wingers and conservatives out there that want these speeches banned. And I'm like, no, that's not the deal, guys. Hey, you cannot like them. You can have the wrong opinion on them. But especially when we're talking about banning people's speech and movement in such a time, especially now and even then, because, you know, authoritarianism has only moved forward, right? We're having that now in a manner even in 1960 we couldn't fathom. But I would argue that's probably because of technology and where we are with that.
Yeah, it is interesting that, you know, the pendulum swings so hard and that the story kind of repeats itself over time, right? I mean, a lot of the narrative and the propaganda right now is just a restructuring of the post 9/11 stuff. And people are being put into corners. And like you said, if you question anything or say anything, then you're either an enemy of the state or what have you. And I just, you know, it throws back to, of course, the 1960s and those things. And like you said, social media and the infinite scroll sort of amplifies all that. I think that MK Ultra and Midnight Climax are certainly responsible for a lot of this stuff, you know, social programming and experimentation on the public, en masse, on record, it's crazy, right? And that now a large segment of the population has no idea of this or thinks it's total fantasy. With the CIA thing and Fidel, what's interesting in the book, it says that at one point the CIA sent a $50,000 check to Fidel and the revolutionaries while it was happening. And then immediately after the victory, I guess they discovered that I think Fidel took over a Chevron, not an oil rig, but a Chevron, and the United States was angry about this. Then Fidel switched his loyalties to getting oil from the Soviet Union, and I guess that was the impetus, of course, for turning against them in such a. I mean, this was a complete 180 at the time, which is totally forgotten now. But even during the revolution, Fidel stated that. That they weren't necessarily communist at the time. They were, you know, sort of some sort of Cuban nationalists reacting to Batista. But then, of course, later on with the adoption of the Soviet Union, they became full, you know, full communist state. But even that is interesting because you wouldn't expect that to be the case, that you would think that from the very beginning, the reason for the revolution was purely communist. But apparently it wasn't. I mean, maybe it was for Che, but for Fidel, I guess it wasn't. But my point with all this is I think that it's a good the past is prologue and it's a good reflection upon what we're going through now, like you said, with the campuses, with protests, with, you know, again, an exterior war that's having such an effect on us here. I suppose.
You know, and another big aspect of Castro is that he did reign for a very, very long time. Right. Like he was maybe longer than any other leaders I could think of outside of the royal families in Europe, right?
Like eight presidents or something, right?
He was also able to kind of make a comeback. I still remember the infamous Obama handshake. And again, that played right into the political narrative of he's a socialist and a communist and you can't trust him. And then obviously there are theories out there right now. I'm not saying they're correct, but there's certainly a lot of people that have played into them. And the, you know, evidence is out there and there is circumstantial that he fathered Justin Trudeau. Whether that's true or not, I mean, that's another really bizarre aspect that I think, if true, would play into a lot of this. But again, even if it's not true, it's already played into the culture and narratives tremendously.
Yes, a striking likeness, even more so than the Barbara Bush, Aleister Crowley thing, which is, you know, also could have happened, I suppose. The funniest thing about all that was back in the day when Ted Cruz was tweeting about that he was the Zodiac, you know, and then there was the stuff about his dad and Castro. And a lot of these books don't really go into Brigade 2506 and Bay of Pigs too much. And I'm sort of trying to figure out why in these biographies they don't go into it heavily, I suppose, because that plays against the tone of the narrative of Che being the people's Fidel being the people's hero. But regardless of all that, you know, objectively, outlasting like 8 U.S. presidents, right? Being there right when the JFK event happens, being there when Reagan happened, you know, he outlasted the Cold War, made it through the Cuban Missile Crisis, whatever that was, into the 21st century, which is insane. I mean, he really did last a long time. And then his brother, Raul, takes over. And I guess now they have a, you know, a younger president, but it is amazing that the Obama thing that happened. I learned today from a friend, that he was on a semester at sea for college when 9/11 happened, and his cruise ship was diverted, by Cuba, and they were invited by Castro to Havana, and he saw Castro speak, and he threw a party for the cruise, for the college. And I guess this was an attempt at, you know, repairing relations so that he wouldn't be on the terror list, you know, immediately post 9/11. And I don't know if it got him anywhere, but that's crazy that even happened at all. Or that if you go to a foreign country, for instance, you know, if you go to England, they're free to visit Cuba. But we can't. I wonder when this whole thing is going to end or what the solution will be. Like you said, you know, the United States and the establishment loves someone they can point to as an enemy, and that's various people, I guess, on the grand chessboard. But what are your thoughts about it? Will it end?
Well, that's a good question, right? I think they want those spots. For instance, one of the highlights for me, and again, it would kind of be one of those moments that's kind of a reflective moment. People that didn't like that Barack Obama shook hands with Castro. For me, that was hey, I'd rather these guys be talking. I'd rather the chance that we can go to Cuba. I don't need another boogeyman. Let's de-escalate whatever military, you know, dink swinging talks are out there. That's what I would say there. And then you look at when Trump went and shook Kim Jong-un's hand, right? And I was like, that's another one of those moments. And then the detractors are like, oh, you're weak. And, you know, this is a terrorist nation. No, I want the de-escalation. And yes. You know, you mentioned somebody you knew that had visited Cuba under, you know, odd circumstances. Well, I guess it wouldn't be odd circumstances, but one of my buddies has gone to North Korea not once, but twice. You know, and he says, obviously, it's a lot different from what the perception is in the United States or around the world. And again, there is this large perception versus reality factor. And I think having a boogeyman in your back pocket never hurts. And I think the right, corrupt, and political and corporate interests are always involved just enough, right, with those nation states to get that kickback. Otherwise, a guy like Castro can't be in power that long, right? I think we've already seen that with the Central Intelligence Agency. Yes, have they botched some overthrows? You bet they have. Have they botched some coups? You bet they have. But I bet you we know less about those than all their successes and victories. So if they really want you out, I'd argue they can get you out.
Yes, yes. The accounts about what Fidel did when he found out about JFK are pretty interesting because they are kind of conflicting, but most of them say that when he found out this happened, you know, he was not happy about it. He was upset that it happened. For one, it's, you know, destabilization just to the north. And the thing about North Korea that's funny is I always remember what Norm Macdonald said, right? That we're supposed to have nightmares about this tiny little country on the other side of the world. This, you know, I wake up, you know, with night sweats because of North Korea's nukes. I don't think so. But even now, with the conflict in the middle, you know, all the stuff happening in the Middle East, North Korea still gets thrown into the mix by name, right? Well, and it's always so, it's like totally extraneous. It's like, well, there are missiles that are falling on, you know, on the cities in the Middle East. But also remember that North Korea has missiles and they fell into the ocean last week. So keep that into account, right? Just to terrorize you, you know, a little bit at a time with drips and drabs, which I think is insane. But part of, I guess, the continuous narrative that we
well, I mean, they're part of the axes of evil, my friend. I mean, that's bottom line is they were like, they're old school.
You're either with
us.
Yeah, you're either with
us. The early 2000s is back, bro. Limp Bizkit is touring. So, you know, you, got, yes. you can just recycle these things and bring them back. And people have that moment. And it's extremely unfortunate. I hope that we don't really get there with Cuba. But like you said, there hasn't been a lot of talk of real relations. But overnight, you know, again, the right political movement or move could allow that to happen. I don't see it happening with a North Korea. Obviously, I don't see it happening with a nation state like Iran or Syria or Libya or anything that ends in a stand anytime that's soon. Right. And that's unfortunate because that culturally hasn't left us. And that even again reflects back to what we're seeing with Israel and Palestine and what's going on in the Middle East. You know, my only hope is that people can start to recognize this stuff and get beyond it and get beyond the two-party system and the conservative and the liberal nonsense. But again, when I see what's going on with these protest situations and like you said, a nation that's even further away than the one we were talking about earlier, I don't know how much hope I have. I mean, I think we're falling for the same things again and again and again.
Right. Well, yeah, never forget, right? And you know, you stand, you know, we stand with it. Watch this drive, right? It really is, you know, it's interesting that we're in these times, but that we sort of lack the, those were wild times immediately post 9/11, but there was also another side, which was a weird unity that came out of it and a some sort of weird positive spirit in terms of like daily relationships. And I think we're totally lacking that now. It's a shame that it takes a huge driving event for those things to happen. Hopefully that won't happen. Hopefully we can just have peace everywhere. And quit warring in all these places. But I just think it's interesting, and I dread the next one that will pop off in a small island in the Caribbean as history has gone before us. So
yeah, I hope that we don't get there. My friend, let people know where they can subscribe to you on YouTube, where else you're at on social media, and some of the breakdowns you have for them recently over there. I know you checked out Civil War amongst many other films, especially ones going back decades, including things like Salvador.
That's right. Yes, you can find me at Bayes Lit Analyzer on YouTube and Instagram. I do literary analysis. I'll be doing a stream tomorrow night on I Thought I Was a Human, But I Guess I'm an AI Cyborg. All of the films with that trope in there. So thank you so much, sir. Really appreciate it. Everybody have a good night. Peace.
Well, with that, it's not a trope. I mean, I enjoyed the Westworld series, my friend. And even you go back to the old school, you know, movies, Westworld and then Future World. That's classic Michael Crichton. Those are pre-Jurassic Park days that are kind of even an extension of all that stuff. Bayes Lit Analyzer, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. Guys, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We got two great guests lined up for you. You're not going to want to miss it. Matt Baker and Zach Payne. We're going to talk AI, the trials and tribulations in Trump, and much more. I am Jason Burmison. We'll be back with more TNT after this.